This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. It's the second Saturday of the month. It is October 14th. It's LGBT History Month, and we've got a very special Santa Moran Radio Book Club. We are discussing An American Queer, The Amazon Trail by Lee Lynch, and we have Lee Lynch and her house guest, author Jane Fletcher, from the UK on the show today. And my fellow panelist is Jonda Boyce.
Hello, thank you.
Now, I want to say to all the listeners that it's important to support community radio. We're out here talking about LGBT arts, LGBT music, and in this case, literature. We're featuring well-written books, and these are the voices of our people, the community. If you support community radio, it's all volunteer-run. All the programmers are volunteers. And the book club is part of the 10th Voice, our LGBT public affairs show here in Kansas City. It's been on the air since 1988, so we have a proven track record.
Doing lesbian books, gay books, transgender books, talking about LGBT issues. Kansas City is really fortunate to have had this radio show.
You are going to hear an interview with Lee Lynch and Jane Fletcher, two authors on the West Coast, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. I want to welcome Lee Lynch and Jane Fletcher. Thank you both for being on the show.
It's a great pleasure to be asked to be on the Santa Moran show.
Yeah, thanks for inviting us.
I'll start with you, Lee. I want to ask you for a first question. You have a major award named after you at the Golden Crown Literary Society. You've won major awards. You have published a number of books, and you were one of the first to be interviewed for Legacies of Lesbian Literature, that project. What would you say to the 15-year-old and the young college student who was terrified and afraid to come out, named Lee Lynch?
Oh, to myself at that age?
Yes.
Afraid I was already out back then. I came out at 15, and I don't know that there's a thing in the world you could have said to me that would have made me less fearful. There were just too many negative sonic vibes coming from everywhere. The best thing really was that I had a lover at that age, and we could be together and help each other. But we also lived in New York. So we were in a place geographically where we could actually see other lesbians, young and old, and get the message that they had survived and were doing well.
And when you started writing the column, the Amazon Trail, did you foresee doing 400 or more columns?
I didn't foresee doing any columns. This was a suggestion of my then-partner, T. Corinne. So I tried it, and a couple of papers picked it up, and T and I were both very cognizant of the necessity of recording our history, our herstory. And so that she was doing it in art, and I was doing it in writing. And once I started, there was no reason to stop, ever, because it's always changing, and there's always more to say. I didn't know if we'd be alive the next year. Things were changing for the better, but they hadn't gotten there yet. So 400 columns later, I feel very fortunate to have lived long enough and been given enough freedom to write them.
I have to admire you with the variety of topics that you found to write about.
Oh, the variety of topics, yes. Well, that's out of desperation. It's hard to decide. And a lot of times the ideas will come from other people, other partners and friends.
I'm sitting beside Jonda Boyce, one of our other panelists, and she has a question for you.
One of the topics that you addressed was a bit surprising to me. I've just finished reading Bonnie Morris's The Disappearing Elle. You have a chapter in Amazon Trail. You wrote a column in 1996 called The Invisible Lesbian. Can you share some of your thoughts with us about the struggle to keep lesbian culture alive? Is that still an issue?
Very much so. For one thing, the commercialism of everything in the United States is a temptation for every writer. I won't name names, but there are many who went to mainstream publishers. I don't think they respect our culture as much. There are exceptions, of course, like Dorothy Allison, who managed to straddle both worlds. So there's the commercial aspect, and there's the fact that some of our better-known literary organizations are into assimilation, which perhaps will make some people more money down the line, or perhaps will reach more people, straight and gay. But I was just corresponding with Jamie Anderson and telling her how much I appreciate that she's still around telling her stories, singing her songs, and she said the same of me. And sometimes I feel like some of us are the last ones standing. Does that answer your question?
It does. It does. What can we do to help keep it alive?
What you're doing. You are archiving?
This will be a podcast, so it will be archived, yes.
But by what you're doing, you are disseminating the idea that lesbians can write and can have an influence on the world in terms of our survival and in terms of thriving in literature and art and in everyday life. Because one of my beliefs, I may not always have been out on the active lines, protest lines, but I hope that I made somebody feel strong enough to do that.
I would guess that you very much did. In fact, one of your columns that you wrote in 1988 ends this way, and I'm sure you're quite familiar with it. In this month of gay pride, and of course it is LGBT History Month right now, I exhort you and I join you in signing up for the groups and in signing the checks and writing the books and in writing the petitions, in holding the meetings and holding the hands that hold up the banners that spread across the world and wrap us all into one people, one brave, scared, angry people who marched so strongly on Washington last fall and cannot stop marching now. That is very, very true in October 2017.
Yes, it is. And I think it will always be true. I don't think we'll ever fully be appreciated in the world. We're a minority. We know how minorities are treated and disrespected and feared.
As you pointed out, we have a voice, and as long as we're using it, and you mentioned Jamie Anderson, there's still a lot of women's music and musicians touring and going to festivals, so there are people listening, and I think we can make a difference.
We do. Every day, everything we do, every dyke that goes in to work and is out, and every gay man who comes out to his family, it makes a difference, whether we're being creative or interpersonally, insisting that we exist and are no longer invisible. We're going to continue to make a difference over the eons ahead. We hope we have an eon ahead.
May I ask what you are doing these days? What keeps you occupied?
Well, I'm continuing the Amazon Trail. I'm mostly working on a sequel to my most recent book, a novel, Rainbow Gap. So I continue the Amazon Trails that we're supposed to be talking about today, and well into two books after that. Life is good. I'm 72 now. I'm married. We have a home that we plan to stay in forever, and it makes a big difference. I went through a lot of relationships when I was younger and then tried to stay in relationships but wasn't successful until I was 61. So now is my time. I'm retired from earning money, and I can devote myself mostly to writing and living a little better.
And I know you're occasionally still dancing.
You've heard that, huh?
I saw it.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do still enjoy dancing. That's from the bar days. Gosh, we all have to keep dancing, don't we?
I think we do. And do you mind if I ask Jane a question or two?
Absolutely, yes. I'm so honored that Jane and her partner are with us, visiting with us and having fun with us. And I was very anxious to expose her to your listeners.
Jane, there's a book club in a neighboring city, a college town, Lawrence, Kansas, and they are doing your book, The Shoestone, next month. They had this scheduled at the beginning of the year, and they are big fans of yours. It's the Lawrence Women's Book Club. I asked them what they would like to ask you, and one of their questions was, they previously read Wolfsbane Winter, and it seemed that this world was the future Earth. Was that the intention, and what was the message there?
Not so much a message. I mean, writing fantasy, people often ask me, how you do the world building. And for me, the world building's always easy. But in part, I have an idea for a story. So it's what world would make this story work, whatever message I want or however I want the plot to go. And so with Wolfsbane Winter, yeah, I was, you know, initially starting like a... I knew I wanted a hereditary group who were ruling, who used magic. I knew I wanted mercenaries. I knew I wanted monsters. And so initially I was just like a, you know, a generic fantasy world. When I was about, you know, just part way in, I thought, hang on, this would be quite fun if I made it a post-apocalyptic Earth. And just wondered at what stage the reader would realise when they were reading it that, in fact, it's not future, it's not a fantasy world, it's actually post-apocalyptic Earth. I said, you know, part of the backstory in my head, it was basically a group of aliens who had, you know, either picked up a broadcast of Xena or some other fantasy story and had come to Earth expecting it to be like the series had been picking up, and when they discovered it wasn't, they changed Earth to make it more like the story, totally ruined it, killed most of the population, and then after a couple hundred years left. And then the story I was setting it a couple hundred years later. So with Wolfsbane Winter, it was the world that worked for the story, and if you never realise that it's Earth, the story should still work. It's just I kind of hope that halfway through, suddenly the light bulb goes on for the reader and they realise, you know, like... I mean, I have the Arnwolf mercenaries who travel the Misery Trail, down the Misery Trail, and ending up in Nullins. And at what stage people realise Misery is actually Missouri, or if not. It was partly me playing around. It was partly that it worked. It made it easier to write, because I could pull out an atlas and see where the roads were and where the hills were. And so not quite so much creation, because the world was already there. It was just fitting it into a convenient piece of geography.
Coincidentally, we're calling you from Missouri, so... Well, the book club had another question, and I know that they'd love it if you'd answer this, too. In your series, you sort of redefine gender, or at least gender roles. You create your world built around women's strength and not just reactions to men. Could you talk about gender roles in your series?
I mean, science fiction generally has always been very open to questioning gender, in fact, questioning everything. And if your only experience of science fiction is, you know, sort of what you see on television, it might come as a bit of a surprise. But, I mean, you can go right back to Theodore Sturgeon and The World Well Lost, where, back in the 1950s, he was totally challenging heterosexuality. If no one's ever read it, it's the history of the gay and lesbian literature, read The World Well Lost. I mean, he was a straight man, but he was totally hitting heterosexuality and flipping things around and playing games. And there's lots of books in science fiction that will do this, that will create women-only worlds, men-only worlds. Even the most rigid of science fiction writers will still have no trouble having aliens with three sexes or hermaphrodite. So I really am fitting into a tradition of questioning sexuality, sexual roles. Both the two series I write, one of them, I mean, the Soleno series, I've got a women-only world, which is a staple of lesbian science fiction. You basically use, you know, science fiction to give a vague rationale for how the world is there, how it exists, how it perpetuates. But having done that, what games you want to play? I also, with the Soleno series, I'd read slightly too much lesbian science fiction, where this women-only world has got six-foot-tall vegetarian Amazons who are led by, you know, wise, noble women. And I have to admit, I've met too many women I'm not that keen on, but it never quite rang true to me. So with the Soleno world, I tried to populate it with the women, sort of women that I know. I must have actually based them all on characters, although I will say that one particular character I did base on the high school bully when I was 14, and I really enjoyed when I was writing it knowing she was going to end up with a knife in her back, but that's kind of a personal issue. But copying it for the women I know and just see how the world runs and trying to make it believable. So in the Soleno series, you've got, you know, the women, some of them are good, some of them not so good. They get into relationships, they get drunk, they mess up, the people ruling it, some of them are well-meaning, even if they're misguided. The Llamas series, I'm very definitely much more playing games with gender, creating a world where magic is so important that by comparison the difference between men and women is seen as being completely irrelevant. So to say that you're only attracted to men or only attracted to women would be like saying you're only attracted to people who are left-handed. the difference between men and women is just not important in the Larmouth world. I wrote the first book in the series, and then when I came to edit it, I realised I had, you know, slightly too many male guards and too many female shopkeepers. So as I went through the book, the first time I edited it, I had a coin on my desk, and as each character came up, unless I had a good reason, I flipped the coin and reassigned gender on the basis of that. No one's ever come back to me and said, oh, this character, no man would act like this, or no woman would act like this. But yeah, about the third of the characters, the Exile and the Sorcerer, had a sex change between the first and second draft.
I've never heard of a coin flip gender match. That's interesting. I wanted to ask Jane and Lee, how did you all become friends? Jane, you live in England. Lee, you've lived in the United States. How did you all meet and become friends?
Well, we're both published by Bold Strokes Books. It's the most obvious link.
Yes, and Golden Crown Literary Society enabled us to physically come together because we both attend conferences. I've never been to the UK, but Jane and Joni are over here because Joni's mom is here, and so they're doing a little traveling, and we were on their route. But this is the most time we've ever spent together, and it's been great talking to another writer, even though the worlds we talk about are so different, but they're not. They're exactly the same. They're just in different form. And we had a conversation at lunch today, one of the many lunches. We've just been eating our way through this. We're both working on moral, ethical issues in our current book. Is that true, Jane?
Yeah. I mean, for both of us, you know, the way we're approaching character and the flaws in the characters and how they tell the story and what we're trying to handle in the stories are similar, even though on one level the books are very different.
I wanted to ask, you mentioned Bold Strokes Books, so they can find you on the Bold Strokes Book Facebook page and website. Is there another place as well they can find each of you?
We encourage them to go directly to Bold Strokes, but they can also go to Bella Books, who distributes Bold Strokes Books. But if you want to support the authors, rather than Amazon, go to Bold Strokes or Bella.
And also the gay publishing industry, keeping the money. You know, if you want to keep the profit in the lesbian world and strengthening so that, you know, we can have more books out, that's where to go.
Our show has been on the air since 1988, and we're all about supporting the individual authors and the musicians and the artists.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that you probably are at the dinner hour on the West Coast, so I want to thank you so much for being on the show and giving up your visiting time.
Oh, well, once again, thank you so much for wanting to talk to both of us and letting us talk to your audience.
It's been one more bonus from visiting Lee and Lainey, so yeah, thank you again.
Thank you very much.
And if your book club wants to get in contact with me after reading The Shoestone, I'm always available.
Oh, I will definitely let them know, and I'm planning to drive over to Lawrence for it.
Okay.
And the same with Rainbow Gap, if you get to that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Wonderful.
You were listening to Lee Lynch, Jane Fletcher, Elizabeth Anderson, and myself, John Du Bois, and we were doing a discussion of Amazon Trail, Lee Lynch's release, and we're in the studio with Rashawn Gilmore, Linda's at the controls, and Elizabeth's on the line. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm looking for Chris Bryant. There's tons of authors here in Provincetown at Women's Week, and she has been a big hit as a Bold Strokes author.
Rashawn's here right now. We want to talk to you with Rashawn and do a little pitch, and then we'll call you back at the end of the show just for a couple minutes.
Hey, Elizabeth, how are you, my dear friend?
Hi, Rashawn. This is great. I really appreciate all of you doing the show for me while I'm hanging out at the end of Cape Cod.
Well, you know, I am so grateful to not only be here as part of the hosting team, if you will, for the 10th Voice, but also because I've been a listener for a very long time here at KKFI and a guest a number of times.
You have, and it's your guesting was one reason you became a host, because you've been on the book club twice, right?
At least twice. And
at least twice.
Yeah, this
I know for Audre Lorde.
And for Charles Blow.
That's right, and you were wonderful. You know, the book club couldn't go on, and the 10th Voice couldn't go on if it weren't for KKFI and for the listeners, but also for the host, so thank you.
Well, I'm just very honored to be a host. I think about Unbossed and Unbothered, and what an opportunity it is for me, but it's possible because we have community radio, and the community is
radio.
So important in that.
Show and Trans Talk.
It's amazing to have so many voices of the 10th voice on the show right now, and that's why I wanted to get you on the phone while Rashawn was here. Every one of us brings something different to the show, and every one of us is an important part of the show. We all have our different connections and interests, but we all come together as a team, and I think it's really important for the audience to hear that and see that, that we are a team, we are working together.
Well, and as an editor, I spend a lot of time chasing authors, and I'm going to chase one now.
Okay, thanks, Elizabeth. We'll talk to you later. It was fun to have Elizabeth take. She's so excited to be chatting. She's like going off the wall.
She's at Women's Week and she's rubbing it in, but that's all right.
She's having a great time, it sounds like.
So on behalf of Philip and of Una and Fiona, Rashawn, Linda, Elizabeth, I'm just here as a poser today.
You're part of our team.
John,
you've been on many times.
I just want to say thank you so much to our listening audience. You guys make it all worthwhile for every program that we have here on the station. And just know that this is your community radio. We are here because you guys make it possible. So your support is needed and appreciated. Thank you.
Always so great to see you.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. It's the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club, and we are discussing The Amazon Trail by Lee Lynch. I want to talk to Linda Wilson and John DuBois about the book. Jonda, we were talking to Lee about her book, and what thoughts occurred to you?
Very happy to hear that she's still writing, working on two books at a time. Doesn't surprise me a bit. I wanted to point out that this is a 2014 book, A Quarter Century of Queer Life in the United States, and it's collected essays that she wrote from 1988 to 2013. And it's a good read for anybody who wants an overview of where we've been, and also just a really fun, you know, brilliant lens on LGBT life, particularly lesbian experiences from that period. And she speaks of the 60s quite a bit as well, coming up in the 60s and 70s, and the essays are a quarter century of lesbian life. It was a quick read, a wonderful read, and as she mentioned, it's Bold Strokes Books, which you can get from their website or from Bella Book.
And there was an earlier edition, a NIAID publisher had put together a book, but this particular edition, 2014, has many more essays and brings it more up to date to 2014.
Linda? And she's proven that it's never been easy to be a lesbian or gay, but especially a lesbian because you have two strikes. Because being a lesbian, you just don't have the clout that gay men do. And as a woman, you also don't have the clout as other women do. So there's a lot of women who stay married because they'd like to have that clout, and they never come out as a lesbian, even though they might have affairs and stuff, but they never come out. And I really enjoyed reading some of that. I could relate to a lot of the stories she told. I didn't come out until I was in my 30s.
And I've said before, but I didn't come out until my early 40s. I was fearful. I identified with, for instance, she talked about what to call a partner. And there was an entire column on different names that you might call a partner. It's tough.
Well, it still feels funny to me to call Barbara my wife. And I still stumble across it because for 65 years, I was not allowed to say that, or I couldn't say that, you know, because she wasn't my wife. And when you said something like that, people looked at you like, you're a weirdo.
If you don't mind, I'd like to read from a 1999 essay that's relevant to what Linda and Elizabeth were just discussing. This is Y2Gay, written in 1999. When I think back to that first moment at age 15 when I leaned over and kissed Susie and how frightened we were of being caught, I remember the terror mixed with excitement that became a part of my being. Hypervigilance settled deeply into my very muscles. Today, that tension is ingrained, that caution a part of me. I still find it difficult not to lower my voice when I speak the words lesbian or gay. You know, I came out young, actually, but I think I learned to lower the voice. And some of it was exciting, to be honest. Some of it was having a little secret. It wasn't all bad to be in a subculture. Met a lot of wonderful people simply because I was a lesbian, because they would accept me into the tribe. But I do think we get that minority stress kind of into ourselves.
Well, it was always fun to travel to San Francisco or to go to the March on Washington and be able to hold your partner's hand and kiss in public, because you feared to do that any other time. I know I had, standing outside a gay bar, I've had rocks and bottles thrown at me and nasty words and all kinds of stuff.
I do think it's different, particularly movies and TV. There's more representation. There's entire shows like The Fosters and so on. But still, in coming out, there really aren't lesbian bars anymore.
No.
Gay bars aren't always comfortable for young women, and so there's still, particularly in rural areas, small towns.
Well, even in San Francisco, there's not a gay bar. I mean, a lesbian bar. There's lots of gay bars, no lesbian bars. They might have one night a week, maybe a Thursday or something, that lesbians are welcome, but never a place of our own.
I know in a small town, she was saying it can be hard to find people because they might stay home. They might have their work to do. They may be farming, unless you have something like a house concert. And she talked about how that will bring people in. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow, I didn't know you knew them. And
right.
It can be hard.
I think we have to, you know, work at welcoming others into Dyke community. She calls it Dyke community. I kind of liked that. We need to, you know, remember that when we get comfortable and we have our friends, that other people do still need friends. I've moved around a lot, and I've had some wonderful folks welcoming me, and I've also had a year of real loneliness where nobody was interested in new friends. There wasn't anything personal. They just already had their friends. And we can help just by asking people to come to dinner or go to the house concert. That's a elite crowd. Bring in some people that aren't already a part of your in crowd already.
And I was seeing on Facebook today that someone just found Trap Fury and was so excited to hear her voice. And I said, if you're going to Provincetown, she's going to be there.
Yeah.
It's also exciting to read books by lesbian authors, because particularly a nonfiction book like this, there are stories that the listener will probably identify with.
Yeah, it's not very often that you have stories about your experience as a lesbian. They're very uncommon. Really good stories. Usually they're stories where somebody gets killed or, you know, in an abusive relationship or something, and the lesbian never turns out well. Lately, there's a lot more books out there that have positive lesbian roles in them.
And movies. Elizabeth and I are both film fans, so I want to mention that that's another way to find community, even if you can't find real community. Go to the gay and lesbian film section or subscribe to Wolf Video.
Go to women's festivals.
Yes, go to women's festivals.
You'll meet a lot of people.
Of all ages. That's one thing. She writes looking back, but she also, the early essays are what she thought at that time. As she mentioned, she's now in her early 70s. That's 400 essays. That's an amazing body of work.
Yes, it is.
And Jonda, I notice you have lots of notes. Did you have another passage that you wanted to read?
She talks about growing up in New York City. She says, although my parents saw New York as the enemy, I think it's the best gift they could have given me. Of course, they were right. I was sucked into the underworld of gay life. And I was right. It was a glorious underworld. They thought the city was dangerous, but I found it safe. Susie and I were never evicted from museums for making out. No gay adult so much as spoke to us. No bar let us in. We learned through experimentation, like all baby dykes did. The difference was that I knew from day one that we were not the only lesbians in the world, and from day two that lesbians were as happy and productive as anyone else in New York. I knew these things because I could see my future self diddy-bopping down the street, and I was in love with her, too. I love that image. They were 14 and 15 when they started making out in museums, I think, from what I gleaned from the book. And Lee mentioned to us earlier that she saw lesbians in New York City in a way that I think gay kids today see lesbians, or if they're trans or gay kids, trans or gay adults in media, on Facebook, YouTube, or whatever the kids are watching now on television sets or computers. That may be how a non-New York City kid now sees other people like themselves.
I enjoyed the passage where she talked about her great aunt, and she realized that her friend Vera often stayed over. In retrospect, she wondered if maybe this great aunt, whom she really didn't know, was lesbian. And I identified with that because I had a great aunt who was single her whole life in China, built a school, was a teacher, and looking back on it, family stories, she was considered weird, odd.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of teachers said that they were roommates when they were probably really lovers. And I think there's lots of stories of that around.
To sum up, this is a Bold Strokes book. That's the publisher. And Lee Lynch has been writing for decades. Jane Fletcher, visiting from the UK, is a science fiction fantasy author. And this has been delightful to talk about the Amazon Trail, quarter century of queer life in the United States.
A great herstory. You're listening to The Tenth Voice here on KKFI. Mark Manning is here in the studio with us. Hi, Mark.
How are y'all doing?
Hi, Mark.
Good. Mark, you and I have been out so long, it's hard to imagine that there's still people doing that.
It's true. And
but they are, and if they tune in to KKFI, they'll hear about places that they can go and be connected.
You know, Jonta and Linda and I all feel this way, but having this 1 hour for the 10th Voice on our broadcast dial, we want to protect that hour and keep that hour for our community to serve our community.
That's
and
right.
We're a very diverse community. When you think about the LGBTQIA group of folk, we're basically 10% of every different group out there. So we have different race, religion, countries, color, everybody. There's such diversity within our community that we serve a really wide group of interests. And that's why our hosts are so diverse and bring all different kinds of perspectives to that story about LGBTQIA people living in Kansas City
yes.
and surrounding areas.
And I really appreciate the team that we have now. It is very diverse. We have Phil Blue Owl Hoosier on the first Saturday and Elizabeth Anderson doing the second Saturday with the Sandra Moran Book Club. D. Rashawn Gilmore is on the third Saturday, and he brings his own smile. And he's
next week is his third
time.
His third month.
But you would think he'd been doing it for years. He's so
he's
polished
great.
And great.
Yeah.
He's so good already. And then on the fourth Saturday, we have Una and Fiona Nowing with the Trans Talk. It's a great team, and they bring a lot to the 10th Voice and for the community.
I have a special place in my heart for the 10th Voice because the reason that I'm at KKFI, and I've been volunteering here for almost 16, 17 years now, but the reason I am here is because of you, Linda, because way back in 2001, you asked me to be a part of the team of the 10th Voice, and I worked on
you
the show.
You were a great asset for
I worked on the show for about 8 or 9 years, and we had quite an adventure together.
Yes,
in my
we
first
did.
3 or 4 years, you and I were part of a group of people that kind of helped save our station.
Yes, yes.
Remember when
Iris
Dement did the benefit show for us?
Oh, yeah. Those were the good old days. Or bad old days. But they were fun being part of taking the action and doing things. That was what was good.
Right. It was a 3-year struggle, but
it
we
was.
Formed a non-for-profit group, and we actually did our, called the Friends of Community Radio.
Right.
Iris Dement did it.
They're still meeting, you know that.
They are. It's Friends of Community Media now.
Linda Wilson is a goddess. Let me just say, this is Jonda. She's behind the controls for 10th Voice. She's at the helm for Woman Song 2 hours every Saturday. Linda, I'm not surprised. This is the first I've heard, but I'm not surprised to hear that she helped save KKFI.
Well, the reason that Linda asked me to be a part of the 10th Voice is because for about 3 or 4 or 5 years prior to that, she'd been volunteering herself to run sound for our Big Bang Buffet shows that we were doing.
That was so much fun.
And we were doing them all over town, so Linda would bring all of her equipment into the Midland Theater or Unity Temple or
Just off Broadway,
wherever we were doing a show, and we built up a relationship through that, because I really didn't know you that well until then. And then
the first time I met you was at Phoenix Books when you came and do a reading.
Okay.
Way
back in the 90s,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So Linda was like, have you ever had an interest in radio? And I always have. But, you know, if you believe in the 10th Voice and you believe in hearing the voices of our community and having these stories be told, we've had to fight to keep this program on the air. And this program,
yes.
KKFI went on the air about 30 years ago, and this show went on the air about 11 months later. It didn't come on right away, but a group of people had been meeting in Kansas City after the March on Washington in 1986. And they were inspired by
yes.
that first march, and they decided, let's have a radio show. And they were working independently, and then they found out there was a group of people starting a community radio station in 1988. And our show ended up coming on the air. And Greg Hansen was one of those guys that kept this show going for a long, long time. Right, Linda?
Oh, he did. He put in lots of work for the radio station. He was a station manager for
a while. He went from running the board to becoming the general manager of the station.
Yes, and I think the way the show got on the air was that there was some show got taken off and they didn't have something to replace it, and the show was on the shelf and they just went and put it on.
Right.
That's the start of it.
They'd recorded like a pilot broadcast and it was sitting on a shelf, and they put it on the air and called them up and said, be ready for next week. Something to that
That's
effect,
the way to
right?
get a show. That's the way KKFI works, Ron. Thank you, Mark.
A trip down memory lane, right?
Yes, it was fun.
I loved it.
Someday we have to do a radio special about those years, about the years from 2001 to 2004. And
remember
we
when we
through.
Did the live radio show at just off Broadway?
Yes, yes.
Got me in trouble.
That Linda's a troublemaker. She'll make trouble and she'll make rain.
We got in a lot of trouble back then, right?
We did, but it was fun.
Yes.
I enjoyed every minute of it, Mark.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for all you do. Thank you, Jonta.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
I think we're going to get to call Elizabeth in. Is that right?
Yes.
In our first segment of this hour, she mentioned that Jamie Anderson thanked her for keeping lesbian culture culture alive and women's culture alive. So if she can find one, she's going to play us some Jamie Anderson, during which
this
we will...
This is Carla Wilson, Kiss Me.
It was raining in Seattle, but we never felt a drop. Only 10 we puckered up, I thought my heart would stop. She tasted just like caramel, her hand warm upon my knee. The day that Carla Williams kissed me.
And you're listening to The Tenth Voice here on KKFI. John DuBois is here with me. I'm Linda Wilson. Elizabeth Anderson is on the phone. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Linda. And I'm here in Provincetown, Massachusetts at the end of Cape Cod. And it's Women's Week. And it's all comedy and music and film. But most of all, the streets are crawling with authors and readers. So I... Since it's a book club, I brought an author with me. Chris Bryant is a Kansas Cityan. She is also a Bold Strokes author, along with Lee Lynch and Jane Fletcher. And I'd love to let you hear from Chris Bryant what the experience here in Provincetown during Women's Week is like.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This is my favorite holiday for any sort of author work that I do. I enjoy dealing with the authors from Bold Strokes and from other publications, including magazines and other book publishing companies. And it's just a great chance to meet readers. We get to meet readers that are returning and come every year to support us, and then we get to meet new ones. So this is my favorite time of year, and it's a working vacation for me.
The cool thing is, for some of the other festivals or conferences, you're in a hotel. But you walk the streets, and there are all of these lesbians holding hands and strolling. There's gay men. And you get to the point where it's like, whoa, what are straight people doing here? I mean, it's just kind of overrun with us. For an LGBT show, that's exciting. And the events happen all down Commercial Street and off it. So you might have to go from one end of the street to the other. And it's just great. And I attended one of the Bold Strokes events. Some of these authors are funny. So I want to have Chris tell you about some of the funny authors at Bold Strokes.
Bold Strokes is trying a new thing this year. We did a brown bag author chat, and it was every day this week we had two or three authors just chatting and answering questions from readers or other authors, just a real relaxed environment with lunch. And we had a really great time. It gives the readers a chance to really get to know us on a personal level. And I think they get more comfortable with us, and they get to see our just how we are in real life, and that we are approachable, and we have a good time, and we have a lot of animated writers that when they read, it's fantastic, and you just can't wait to read the book. I mean, there's so many books that I can't wait to read just because I love the authors and how they present themselves and just how hilarious they are. And we always have a good time, even afterwards. After we're done working, we can be found pretty much anywhere and just drinking and having a good time and eating and concerts. So it's, like I said, this is absolutely my favorite week of the whole year.
And Linda, I wanted to let you know that I went to a peace march today from one end of Commercial down to Town Hall, and Suzanne Westenhofer and Jenny McNulty are marching down with selfie sticks, and we're shouting peace, we want it now. So you might do that. And Desert Heart, the director, is here doing Q&A for Desert Heart. And Suede is here, Lisa Koch is here, Zoe Lewis, Trent Fury. It's just been amazing what all there is. And I went to a Bold Strokes event. There's six or seven authors sitting there. Ali Valley, Missouri Vaughn was there, Gene Copeland. And I thought, okay, this will be a serious discussion. I laughed so hard because they know each other, and it was all book focused. It was all on the book, but they just had, Barbara Ann Wright. Oh my God, she was hilarious. And it was just so much fun to hear authors who know each other and know each other's books, and the audience is participating, and really, really witty discussion about good books and all sorts. Historical novels, Gene Copeland, science fiction, Barbara Ann Wright, serial killers in New Orleans, that's Ali Valley, graphic illustration novels, that's Missouri Vaughn, Chris Bryant writes romance. I really feel I picked up a lot of knowledge to bring back to the book club and authors, and I found readers. I'm
awesome.
Excited.
Would those be panelists, perhaps, Elizabeth? The readers will soon be panelists if I know you.
Yes, I have brought back reader panelists. because one said, but I'm just a reader. I'm an avid reader. And I said, hello.
Elizabeth has a job for you.
Yeah, that's what we want for the book club. That there's no question that the book club's a lot of work. We're all volunteer hosts. KKFI is a wonderful community radio station. The 10th Voice is a wonderful show, but I thought maybe I'll go back to just being a 10th Voice host. And I'm so excited about the book club after being in Provincetown at Women's Week.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I would like Chris to talk about what it's like. Well, a lot of writers are introverts, but every year I mentioned that we do get to know one another a little bit better. You find a more relaxed attitude and atmosphere and good camaraderie, good back and forth between the moderator and then also with the readers. It gets better every year. Every single year, I meet new people, and I feel more comfortable with people. I had a pretty eventful day on Thursday.
What were your events, Chris? This is Jonda, and I have no idea how this works.
Well, we tried the brown bags, the author chat from BSB, and it was me and Fiona Riley discussing whatever we wanted. We had open forum. We could discuss our books. We could discuss personal lives if we wanted to. And we actually did a 20-minute session for, we passed out little pieces of paper for people to write never have I ever questions.
Oh.
And we both had paddles that I have or I've had not. I have not. So that was a big success. And it gave the readers and the audience just a chance to get us know us better on a completely different level. Since we both write romance, and some of the questions were pretty racy, but they were fun.
That could be dangerous.
And then after that, I did a reading on love, a panel about All You Need Is Love. And that's when we had a total of 6 writers reading their material to an audience. So it was a busy day.
And
then afterwards, and then after that, it was the Bold Strokes Books meet and greet that they do every year, where it's open to our readers and to other authors. It's basically open to everybody in P-Town.
Now I'm sad that I didn't go to Women's Week.
It's amazing. It really is. I cannot stress how incredible this week is, just for everybody.
I don't think we can let Chris go without asking her to name her books and tell us a little bit about what she writes about.
Perfect. Well, I write contemporary romance, and I kind of have been on a roll lately. My first book was Jolt. It was a Lambie finalist. Then I've written a whirlwind romance. It was a romance about storm chasing, two different teams on storm chasing. I wrote Taste, my first book in a sensory series, and the follow-up is available here only in P-Town for this week, called Touch, and it actually isn't released until January of next year. I wrote a book in Ireland, or about Ireland, a love in Ireland, Forget Me Not. I have 2 books that are through editing right now.
So you have been on a roll.
But it's all contemporary romance, and it's happy endings and the feel-good. I write the fluffy stuff, the good stuff that we all need to escape and read.
Perfect.
Is it autobiography?
Yeah, I cannot answer that. There's a little bit of myself in all of my books. I think as a writer, you can't help but attribute a lot of your emotions and your reactions to things. But at the same time, it's also nice to actually be somebody different, too, and write about, find out who these characters are and find out how different they are from you.
I look forward to reading some of your books.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, Linda. I wanted to mention that I met Chris standing in line to have Sandra Moran and George Hodgman sign our book at Unity Temple on the Plaza. That was May 2015. And we got to talk. She was going to be a novelist, and her first book was going to be published. And now here we are. She's doing great things. She's a wonderful writer. If you don't mind, can I mention some of the authors that are coming up?
Sure. Please do.
Okay. We're going to do Sandra Moran's State of Grace. And we have her sister, Lori, who grew up with Sandra in Dover, Kansas, in the Topeka area. We have Cheryl Pletcher and a friend from high school of Sandra's, Anwa Moore.
In November.
We'll be digging into a book set in small-town Kansas. It's gripping. It's
a very good
wonderful
book.
Read.
Yes.
And that'll be November 11th, right?
The 11th.
We're just too excited.
December, we have Ann Aptaker, and she has written mystery series, Cantor Gold, and so we're going to talk about noir, and Ann is going to join us. Then in January, we have Karen Callmaker, and we're doing Watermark and Touchwood, and early novels, classics, so it's quite a lineup. And I'll be going to Saints and Sinners in March, and I'll find some gay authors. Very exciting.
You've been hard at work and having a great time, it sounds like.
It really is amazing to see all of these, particularly lesbian authors, because I'm Facebook friends with some, and I think, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so, and go over and talk. Bywater is here, Bywater Books, and again, full disclosure, I'm a Bywater editor. But it's really been nice to hang with authors that I really, a couple of them I didn't know well. I read their book, they're reading from upcoming works, and so to hear what they have in store. So I'm very thankful to be hosting the Santa Moran Radio Book Club, and I'm very thankful to be here at a very literary event.
I think you found your people, Elizabeth.
I think I did.
Elizabeth had to retire so she could edit books and go to literary conferences and host the Santa Moran Radio Book Club.
And start a real life.
Yeah, it's a hard life. Let me have Chris give her contact information and we'll sign off.
Okay. Tell us where we can find your books.
Chris Bryant, KRISBRYANT, right?
Correct. I can be found on BoldStrokesBooks.com website. I can be found Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the major retail stores online, or even, I guess, tangible books. And I can be reached at chrisbryanbooks@gmail.com.
Chris with a K. Thank you so much, Chris.
Chris with a K. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. I think that's it. Isn't it amazing how the hosts of the shows donate? They've already donated so much time. I mean, Elizabeth puts so much work into her book clubs.
Elizabeth Anderson is a goddess, too.
She buys books for the people who she wants to be on the panelists. I mean, that's really above and beyond the call of duty, I think.
She has given me books, and whether I join her on the panel or not, she's very generous.
Yes, she is.
With her books and with her sharing her love of literature. The 10th Voice brings you Trans Talk. It brings you Unbossed and Unbought. It brings you The Book Club. It brings you Phillips First Saturday.
And be sure and stay tuned for This Way Out coming up next. It's an international show about gay and lesbian lives. So stay tuned. And that is followed by Wings of Women's International News Gathering Service. Lots of great things happening here on KKFI.